Velkommen til Future of Skills. Mit navn er Natasha Friis Saxberg, og jeg er administrerende direktør i IT-branchen. I skal lukkes inden for den her episode af digitale kompetencer, som er et led i VL's årstema i 2021, nemlig Digital Reshaping, hvor VL har været så søde og kloge at række ud til os i IT-branchen for at i samarbejde sikre, at vi har fokus på at kortlægge behovet for fremtidens kompetencer og de barrierer og muligheder, der ligger i det. Inden vi kommer til panelet, så vil jeg lige komme med nogle husregler. Vi har nemlig slukket for kameraerne og for lyden, men I skal bare give den gas ud i chatten og stille jeres spørgsmål. I skal sørge for at skrive til all attendees og participants eller panelists, for så får jeg spørgsmålene ind på min skærm, og så vil jeg gøre de umulige kunst, nemlig at multitaske mellem fysisk og nogle virtuelle deltagere og det, I skriver. Jeg skal gøre mit bedste, men I må endelig ikke holde jer tilbage undervejs, så får jeg også en fornemmelse af, hvor I er henne i forhold til det, I gerne vil høre. Men inden jeg går i gang, så vil jeg lige skifte til Danglish, because we have an American guest with us, so we'll continue in English. And I'll introduce the panel. We are going to have a fireside chat, which is without the fire or the wood today, but with a lot of interesting skills and people. So welcome to this episode. Our first panelist is Anne Fleischer, who is the CEO at Leo Innovation Lab and Leo Ventures. They manage a health tech venture capital fund with a portfolio of 10 companies that will change how future healthcare is provided in the future, which is digitally, of course. And then a great honor physically, a real human being next to me, Charles Marcus, who is a professor at the University of Copenhagen in quantum physics and principal researcher at Microsoft, director at Microsoft Quantum Lab Copenhagen. That went well, right?
Perfect.
And Anne-Sophie Nielsen, who is the CTO at Peakon, that offers software that can measure and analyze employee engagement. And recently, Peakon got acquired by Workday, so congrats to you. And finally, but not least, we have Morten Holm Christiansen, who is the CIO at Coop, where he has implemented a complete change of Coop's IT platform and secured the foundation for the company's digital transformation. Welcome to you, Morten. So now we're ready to start our fireside chat. And I would like to start with you, Anne. Why and how is Leo Innovation Lab working with the future of skills for your industry?
So how we do it is that we look into the future needs of skills and also actually the future need of how we would see a healthcare system develop towards. So knowing today that already our healthcare systems are under high pressure, we know that this will only be worse. So if we don't do things 10 times better, then we will have many needs of doctors and to provide care for the many patients that will come in the future. So how we have done it is that we have been looking into, so what happens to patients today? What journey are they what path are they following in the healthcare system? And which problems can we then tackle with new digital solutions? And that is the work that has been going on since 2015. And the way we do this is that we have a very diverse team of people. On the one side, we have doctors and dermatologists. And the other side, we have machine learning guys, computer vision engineers, software developers, growth hackers, and product owners. And that combination of skills is really what makes it possible for us to solve these big problems that will increase in the future for people with, in our case, skin diseases.
Thank you so much, Anne. And I'll move on to you, Morten. You have transformed Coop's business model and put tech as a key part of your business value. How are you making sure you have the skills in the future? And how do you transform the organization alongside recruiting externally?
So for us, I think the starting point has been to realize that it's a new challenge for technology and an IT organization, and therefore you simply need a different skill set. So we have for 25 or so years been focused on supporting internal processes like logistics, campaigns, and what have you. So all of the organizational focus had been on internal processes. When we go in on a digital journey and a digital transformation, it changes. The focus is no longer internally, the focus is externally. So what really matters in a digital organization is the skill set to be able to interact with end customers, and the solutions that you develop is targeted at end customers and not sort of external or internal customers. So a complete mindset change is needed in your organization. You have to think about the end customer and not internally in your organization. Then in terms of keeping up that momentum and also transferring the sort of mental state within the organization, we have launched a big cultural change program that we call Winning Culture, which is basically targeted at sort of moving the mindset in the organization towards that the only thing that really matters is to satisfy end customers. And there goes the internal KPIs and all that that we have been doing for 20 years. Now it's all about the end customers. And instead of focusing on solving tasks, it's a matter of customer satisfaction at the end of the chain.
So you have transformed this inside out focus to an outside in focus and put it in part of your culture. Have you set the KPIs? Have you adjusted them accordingly as well?
They're still there, but it's just not what is important. And sometimes you have to keep them because there's some things that you need to keep in control. But previously, the focus had been on sort of predefined and also very well established internal measures. If you really want to make a change, you need to change the mindset. And that mindset needs to be targeted towards the end customer experience.
Thank you, Morten. And on to you, Anne-Sophie. As the CTO of Pecan, you were just acquired by the US company Workday. What are your thoughts and challenges on attracting the right skills now and in the future, where there is a lot of competition on attracting them?
Yeah, I definitely think that we, first of all, need to start by having an equal focus on bringing talent in from the outside and nurturing and growing the talent that we already have. Some of the elements are things like building career paths for tech talent that don't automatically lead to management roles. Not everyone wants to go in that direction. And also understanding the skills and talent that you have in the organization and how we can support people in having long, interesting careers within the company. Another aspect I would like to bring up is really supporting people from non-technical backgrounds in making that transition into tech. I've especially seen a lot of women entering tech careers at a later stage after having started out their work lives differently, and getting them the training and the mentoring that they need and making sure that you plan some junior roles in the mix when you're expanding the team, so that makes for entry points into the company. But most importantly, also building an inclusive working environment where it's okay not to be an expert yet, but where other people around you are invested in making you successful. Another note I wanted to do in that we were switching from Danish to English, you know, the war on tech talent is really international. And I think as a Danish company, you need to take a stand on that. I think my advice and my learning is to really go all in. If you want to hire people from around the world, it can be really difficult to run a hybrid environment where some people speak Danish at the lunch table, others feel left out. So really making sure that people you do recruit also feel included and want to stay in the long term.
And how do you transfer that investment as an organization in upskilling and attracting people and developing them inside your company with the also the commitment from the colleagues? Because in the daily basis, it's going to be up to them whether you succeed, won't it, Anne-Sophie?
Yeah, definitely. So again, I'm glad that Morten mentioned culture, because I think that's really a huge part of it, creating a culture where everybody's invested in making each other successful, not just looking at, you know, how do I become successful, but also how do people on my team become successful so that we as a collective succeed with, you know, the change initiatives or the technical things that we're trying to achieve.
And how do you ensure that?
Well, I think it really comes down to the values and living them and making sure that from a leadership perspective, you are valuing the people that do live up to those values. And that's an essential part of it, you know, performance assessments or, you know, the messaging you give and the way that you choose to role model the values. I think that's the most fundamental thing for success, really.
Thank you, Anne-Sophie. And now to you in the room, Charlie. As a professor at University of Copenhagen in quantum physics, we're standing here and talking about the forefront of technology. And I know because you taught me, it's been quantum always. It's all quantum. So, but how do you ensure that we make this transfer from the universities where quantum has been, around for ages, to the industries where it's becoming hopefully soon a buzzword they'll include in their daily business?
A lot of good questions there. As a, both an industry guy and a university guy, that is, I work for Microsoft, but I'm also a professor at the university, which is an unusual combination of activities during the day. I see that there is a transition from a university activity to a corporate activity. And I think that in Denmark, what has to happen is that the universities have to simply step up their game. I think that the universities are your feeder. They're the feeder of industry, and the success of the industry depends on, I would say, two aspects of university life. The first is that at least in advanced technology, it's those kids who are going to invent what it is that we do. Just like in the last generation, it was the kids, it was Hewlett and Packard or whoever they were, but when they were kids, that invented what became the 20th century's primary technology. And secondly, they're going to be the people you hire. And so I think that the pressure on the universities to prepare people for a role in industry is Denmark's responsibility. Now, the good news is, I think that there's a myth, and I think the myth is wrong, and I want to just say what it is. The myth is that in this new modern age of quantum physics meets advanced technology, meets mathematics and computer science, that we're going to have to develop an educational program in which a person learns computer science and quantum physics and information technology and microwave engineering and systems engineering. And it's not true, because I don't know all those things. Nobody knows all of those things. And I think that the university can stick to its core mission of providing basic education in basic sciences, basic mathematics, basic engineering, and that the field is moving so quickly that people will have to learn on the fly. So don't worry about making well-rounded people. It's too much emphasis on well-rounded. People need to be deep and thoughtful and have the experience of depth and thoughtfulness, and everything else will happen on the outside.
And how do you make sure that the lingo and the mindset and the world that you represent as a university, how do you build the bridge into the industries and the companies who have focus on business value and not necessarily one technology or technology at all?
I think that there can be two things, I guess I would say, which is that there is within every, just as Anne-Sophie said, not everyone wants to grow up to be a manager. Well, not everyone wants to grow up to be a professor either. It's not that great of a life. But I think that many, many people at the university want to come and work for these companies. They have ideas. So let me make two quick suggestions. One is every 2 weeks, we should have a seminar at the university where someone from industry comes in and says, here's a problem that we don't know how to solve. Now, when's the last time anybody from industry went and gave a seminar to university and said, here's a problem that we don't know how to solve? And then had all those bright minds think about that for the next day or so or a couple of days until they maybe had a good idea. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is that a lot of people would like to find out what companies are out there, who can they work for? And there really isn't a linkage. You know, I did my original training and I was a professor for a long time at Stanford University, where there's an industrial affiliates program, and the university has a relationship with these companies, more or less bartering students for investment to these companies, and recognizing that linkage is something that's vitally important for Denmark is, I think, a step that has yet to be taken.
Thank you, Charlie. And I'm going to go back to you, and because you talked a little bit about how you're working with the future to also prepare your industry. And can you talk a little bit about one thing is investing in companies, new ventures in order to create new profit pools for Leo in the future. But what about the input, the knowledge, everything that enlightens you on a short-term basis towards your strategies? Can you talk a little bit about the knowledge transfer between you and these companies?
Sure. So what we have done is actually to have these, we have had a parallel track of investing in ventures. At the same time, we have developed our own digital solutions. The reason why we did this was to constantly have a view on what is happening out there, what great startups are out there who are also solving some of these important problems for patients that we would also like to solve. So having this parallel track has actually ensured that we have been maybe much more honest with how are we doing ourselves. Are we good enough in our own development, our internal incubation unit? And at the same time, we could see what great talents are out there and how can we ensure to create good collaborationship with these. So it has both been reasons to test ourselves, to, as you say, put some money on some bets that could give profit in the future, but also to understand what talent pools are out there, also acknowledging that not all talents live in Copenhagen, but we need to attract them from the outside.
When I was working with corporate venture in ATN Mask, I think one of the great values that we didn't actually think that much about was the questions that the market was asking. So these startups, the way they looked at problems, how they thought about the future of skills. How are you enlightening your management in terms of asking the right questions on the outside-in approach that Morten also addressed?
Yeah, so it's actually back to what I alluded to in the beginning, that we are very much looking into the patient journey. What does our users experience having a chronic skin condition? How long time, for example, does it take to get a diagnosis? When you get a diagnosis, when can you then access treatment and stuff like that? When you get home, how can you ensure that you take the medication as it was designed these 10 years in the pipeline of Leo? So there are some very big questions and some challenges these users, and in our case, patients are experiencing every day. So it has been very pivotal for us to have that mindset in from the beginning, and also have patients in. Every second week, we have had patients into the lab, testing all our solutions, testing new features, giving reliant feedback on how the products are working. So I think those learnings, is of course a key finding for us and also for the top management. So Leo, not in the future only as a drug provider, but as a holistic care company for patients.
And I think when looking at corporate venture, I think that is probably the big difference between running a core company and running a new venture on the side or corporate venture on the side, is that startups, as well as a corporate venture unit, your job is to be obsessed with problems, right? And future problems. And I would like to ask some of the other panelists, how are you looking at problem versus solutions? Are you taking this into your culture as well? Morten, go ahead.
Yeah, so I mean, definitely. And if you look at it from a skill competition point of view, I mean, that's been one of the problems for us here in Coop. I mean, we really, really need the best people to make this digital transformation. And how do you attract the best people to a sort of old and a bit boring and maybe a bit dusty industry like grocery retail? So that's really one of the questions that we have been asking ourselves. And I think we have tried to position ourselves not in terms of the technical challenges, but on the fact that you're building a cathedral, right? You are part of a company transformation, 150-year-old company that is trying to build a new future. And you're not supposed to join or stay with us to solve tasks on request. You are here to drive a business outcome. So the change in mindset we have used to attract new talent and also to retain new talent here in our company.
Thank you. And I have a few questions from the audience. I'll drop that in. Lars Nielsen from UCL is asking, any one of you have talent strategies implemented that includes long-term partnerships within educational institutions in order to nurture the talents? I'll be silent while you think.
Well, I'm from the inside of university, and I would say it's a good question because these things are, maybe the expression is conspicuously absent. Mm. And I think that they would be easy and low cost, and it just amounts to some will of implementing them.
And there's actually a question to you, Charlie, from Lisbeth Dalgaard that asks, good idea connecting industry and universities, but how do we get started? Have you any suggestions or experiences we can use here?
Yes, I have a lot. And the good news is you don't need to invent it. You don't need to sit around and think, how do we do this? You can copy existing programs. So just log on to your favorite big universities. Go look at, MIT and ETH and Stanford and see what they do. Type in the name of that university in industrial and you'll see programs and copy them. So I think it's an easy start.
Great. And there's a question to you, Morten, as well, which is, have you like peak and switch to English as a primary language in your teams?
No, we haven't yet. We discussed that a couple of years ago when we started this big ramp up. But we are caught into a dilemma that big parts of our organization out there in the stores are not English speaking. However, we haven't really had any troubles with it because it has sort of materialized itself with all the great new people that we have hired, when there are people at meetings or gatherings that don't speak Danish, the language has just turned into Danish or to English where appropriate. An interesting thing actually that instead of making a big program and announcing big changes, it has actually happened by itself, and that's been okay.
What about you, Anne? Have you done something of the sort?
No, we have been English speaking from the beginning. We are around 100 people, and half of them are not from Danish, from Denmark. Sorry, not Danish speaking. We have, I think it's 27 nationalities. So we need to speak English every day in every situation.
Thank you. Now we're going to take a bit of a change because I'm going on a break here because I've asked each of you to ask each other a question. And I would like you, Anne-Sophie, to start asking Charlie a question.
Yeah, so thank you for the opportunity. So one of the things I was curious about, Charlie, is the differences that you see between the skills needed for digitization of companies using known technologies versus the skills needed to work on the cutting edge of research into new technologies.
Yeah, I guess my answer comes from a physical sciences background. And I know that because a lot of the frontiers are also in biological sciences, I don't know if what I'm saying applies there as well. So I'll give you my answer that's relevant for my neck of the woods. I think that in existing technologies, you need two kinds of skills. One is the ability to work well with others, to be a good communicator, and to document, pass on information, and work as a team. And in the frontier technology, I would say teamwork is less valuable. And what is more valuable is the creative spark and the ability to think differently and reject accepted ideas. And in some ways, I mean, if we think of the people that we know, a kind of a good, stable, solid engineering personality is sometimes the opposite of the flamboyant inventive type. And so I think both are needed, but I would say that the forefront technology needs out of the box thinkers who are often less obedient and less organized than the ideal worker for an established technology.
Great. And then Charlie, you can pay that forward and ask Anna a question.
Okay, I actually have two questions for Anna, if that's okay. The first is, and this is maybe an example of I never heard about this before, but you know, you mentioned people often don't take their medicine correctly. And I'm sitting here with a bottle of water in front of me that has a QR code on the label. I don't know what happens if you go to that QR code, but I wonder why every prescription that you get from the doctor doesn't have something on it where you, as soon as you get home, you go like this with your telephone and the weekly schedule of when you're supposed to take your medicine doesn't all of a sudden show up on your telephone. And is that something that like you tried and it didn't work, or did nobody ever suggest it? It seems completely obvious to me.
Yes, and it's a great idea. And we actually have QR codes for serialization anyway, but that's for other purposes, of course. The reason why it gets a little bit more difficult than what you mentioned here is that many doctors have kind of their own experiences on how especially this drug would work for, especially you. So the one size fits all is not always the best way forward, or I would say almost never the best way forward.
Good, thanks. Can I ask my second question? I have a second question too. That was a great answer. My second question is, what has happened to the medical industry or your business during COVID that we've learned that we oughtn't do again, that we're all smarter, and that the sacrifice of so many people during this period actually has some upside? What have we learned?
So we had definitely learned that the quite conservative industry have learned to work in new ways. So doctors have learned to work in different ways. And I really sincerely hope that many of these digital tools will continue in the future, because we have here seen that a good consultation with the patient can actually happen over the phone. And the way you can gain data, also passive data from the patient, which you can use then for personalized treatment or better outcomes measures, is really where we can see that these tools gain a lot in being adapting. And that adaptation speed has really also taught me something, where we previously have seen that, well, doctors need to try it, then they need to consider, then we need to, you know, create a new agreement, and then maybe they can consider again. Now they had a need that was so big that they couldn't see their patients, and they needed really to adapt to something new. So the whole adaptation speed, I hope we can benefit from again in the future. And then the use of data on how people are being treated and what their outcomes are is definitely also something we should use in the future, on top of simply having more digital solutions out there.
Okay, Anna, so your turn to Morten.
Yes, Morten, I'm curious to understand how you use data to foresee new trends in, for example, food and what people would like to buy. And knowing that we have had different food trends over the past years, we could foresee that some of them will continue, maybe others won't, maybe there will come new, maybe new will arise. So I would be curious to understand better how you plan accordingly and how you foresee those trends using data.
Yeah, so on a macro level, of course, we are looking into all kinds of trends in the society and try to predict what that entails for food consumption. Where technology and digital thinking makes a big difference for us is to move from sort of mass marketing, mass advertising into personalized offerings. As is the case in many countries, a lot of retail sales is driven by weekly leaflets. I mean, if you live in Denmark, you receive a leaflet from all the big chains with all kinds of offers, which is not good for carbon footprint and is not good for anything really, and certainly not for the industry, because it makes the grocery retail sector very price driven. Right? So what we're trying to do is to make it personal instead. So instead of giving 5 million Danes an offer on diapers or Benke ketchup. We are trying to predict what Anne Fleischer would like to buy, and therefore we are developing for all of our customers personal offers that we submit every morning on our app. So every morning, if you're a member of Coop, you will get a personal offer, which is our best guess on what would you be interested in. And that best guess is used to be based upon sort of parameter-based models. We are increasingly turning to artificial intelligence with sort of the mind shift that instead of just looking at your past purchase behavior, we're trying to throw in a lot of data where that, of course, is an element, but it could be many other things like the weather and what have you. And then see what the machine predict that would be most relevant for you. And we can see a significant uptake, actually, in uptake on personal offers when we use those kind of technologies.
And Morten, can I follow up on that? Because I think this also to Anne's point around the trends, we also see new ways of using food, not only to nurture ourselves, but also food as medicine and a part of a whole health movement. Are you looking into these areas as well? How can you not only nurture us, but also help us on other goals?
Absolutely. Also in a wider perspective, so I'm holding up the Coop app here, just as a small commercial. One of the facilities that we just launched in the Coop app is your purchase CO2 footprint. So if you are concerned about climate change, one thing that you can do is every time you use the Coop app to make a purchase in one of our stores, you can see the carbon footprint on your purchases. And along with that, we give advice on how you can bring down the carbon footprint. Could be, instead of meat, here's an alternative. Not in a sort of prescriptive way, of course, you're the consumer, it's your choice. But we offer digitally and real time transparency into your choices.
Thank you, Morten. And now it's your turn to ask Anne-Sophie a question.
Yes, Anne-Sophie, I just learned that you have been acquired by Workday. And I was just wondering, your company, Pecan, I guess is relatively young. It's full of entrepreneurial mindset and culture and skills, and you've grown a lot, but you were still a relatively small company. So I guess you have been able to attract people that thinks that's just a great place to be. Now you're acquired by a big, I think it's US-based software company, and with that comes all kinds of rules and procedures and what have you. So I was just wondering, I mean, well, how do you manage that change from a skill and motivation perspective?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I think one of the key things is, you know, when you get acquired as a company, they buy you to get things. And some of those things are, you know, the way that we work and the products that we have. So I think it's very important to, even if you move to a different context, to keep growing those skills and keep being entrepreneurial, even though entrepreneurial means something different in a big company. You know, nobody in a big company has an interest in stopping that growth and that aspiration and that innovation. I think bigger companies even more need to be very explicit about how we innovate. That comes a little bit more natural if you're a startup or a scale up, you kind of see that you have to do it. But I think the urgency is as much when you're a bigger company to keep innovating and keep thinking about how am I investing my money? Am I only investing in, say, closing gaps to things that we see majorly competitors have? Or are we also investing in things, or we're doing something that's new that nobody has seen before, but that can really allow us to take a leap? And I think the most important thing of Well, there are two things that are important when you're going through this. One is to keep doing the things that you've been successful at, because that's ultimately why you got acquired. And the second thing is adapting the culture and having a good culture match. And I think I was quite lucky with Workday that that was a really great culture match. I think if you line up our values on the website, they're really very similar. And I think the values are what you build your culture on. So I think those are some of the two key points for keeping being successful at what you're doing.
Thank you, Anne-Sophie. And now I'll go back to all the questions you have asked. I'll try to pick some of them. So Mikkel Hibbebrun, he asks, with regards to the future need for digital competencies and skills, what have we learned from COVID? Some companies have switched to a permanent global remote culture. Will the new skills we have learned accelerate this trend? Up for grabs. Who wants it? Well, I can see a hand. Is that you, Anne-Sophie? Yes.
Yeah, it is. So I think it's interesting. We talk a lot about new skills, like Zoom was around before, Slack was around before, you know, more people have been using these tools. So I think it's not as much the skills, but really the mindset. It just became a we can do this mindset. So it's like we took the barriers that we had in our heads and removed them and used technology that was existing. If this had been, you know, 15 years ago that COVID happened, we wouldn't have had the digital infrastructure to just do it. So I think it's more something that happened in people's heads than actual skills. Maybe that's a skill in itself.
Other answers on that?
Yeah, an interesting story last week. A Danish coffee company called Kaffekapslen was acquired by some bigger chain, and I just learned yesterday. And it was a three-digit million Danish kroner acquisition. I just learned yesterday that actually these two companies never met physically. So the whole transaction, all inclusive, was done among the management teams, and they never met. So quite an interesting thing. Somebody will be spending a three-digit million Danish kroner on an acquisition with people you never met. Quite amazing. I mean, go 1 year back, I don't think that would have happened.
And cascades of employees who've been hired but never met their colleagues the past year. So boundaries have definitely been broken. Another question from the audience is that it seems a bit like you think that the skill talent just comes by themselves to your door, says Lars Nielsen. Currently, we're starting up with joining a national talent program, futureskills.io. The idea is to connect talented IT and tech students closer to the IT and tech industry, with a focus on soft skills. And now to the question, what kind of soft skills do you think is important when you hire talented IT staff to make the future digitalization formation into a success? I hope that made sense.
I can give it a go. So what we look very much into is the ability to really understand where the user is when we develop new solutions. And these soft skills in understanding their experience, show empathy in solving the solutions and really take them in the hands while they experience a new product. That's really something I think will be more and more important. Not to translate what the anthropologist tells the engineer, but really to have more mix of these soft skills, having to solve some problems that have never been solved before. So I think being more out there, also in field work sometimes. I think previously we were having the developers in one room streaming the conversations with the patient and the anthropologist in another room, but I actually see more and more value in combining, having combined interviewers in testing new features, for example. So pushing the developers out there is something that will create better products.
And a question to all of you, except Charlie, I have a special one for you, but how do you compete in attracting the right skills? Because we know from the IT industry that one third says no to orders and 40% of job applications are not filled. What are you doing to get the best people on board when there's such a lack of them?
Yeah, I can start.
Yeah.
So, you know, generally when we look across the data that we collect in the engagement surveys from our customers, we can see that employees are really more value driven than what they were before in terms of who do they want to work for and who do they want to stay with. So having a clear stance as a company on things like climate change or diversity and inclusion and actively actioning that stance is increasingly critical when you're competing for talent, because IT talent can get good benefits wherever they go, right? So that's not really the thing. And I think what we found at Peakon, that the purpose that we have in the company of making work work for people is something that really resonates with a lot of candidates. So fundamentally, I think companies compete on culture and purpose and being a company that someone wants to work for. A little bit of a side note, even though it might be a bit paradoxical, is to not compromising on the hires that you make, both when it comes to skills and values. I think we've had a lot of success through referrals. Generally, good IT people tend to refer their friends to places where they like to work, where they have freedom, where they have autonomy, where they can make the best use of their expertise and have fun at work. So I think it's very important to not lower the bar on who you bring in just because you're in a war for talent.
What about you, Morten? Because you're a food company that worked with tech, and now you might be a tech company working with food. How do you communicate that change towards the people you want to attract?
Well, I think that the two main levers that we are using is, first of all, that we don't hire tech people for the sake of tech. We are hiring people, tech-savvy people, to drive a business transformation. I mean, this is about turning, and again, this 150-year-old company into a future that nobody really knows, but is based upon a digital foundation and directly engaging with end customers. And certainly having that wider perspective on why you are here is something that that is appealing. Then the other thing is that we are committing to become Denmark's best IT workplace. And we are still struggling a bit on how to measure it, actually. There are measures out there. If you ask the students at university where do you want to work, and they all want to go to Novo Nordisk and Maersk and what have you. We're still struggling a bit to find a valid measure for it. But a very firm commitment from the management team that we want to be the best IT workplace, and we communicate that throughout the organization, and we measure it all the time, and we make our leaders and managers in the company responsible, very firmly responsible on employee satisfaction.
Thank you. And now to you, Charlie, now the question, because you actually have the solution to all our problems. If you could attract more people to study STEM, what are you doing about that? So I'll translate that: science, technology, engineering, and math. So that's the skills we need, right?
Yeah, I think that the theme that I've heard throughout this whole meeting is that the more advanced industries, and I'm meaning the people who are participating in this fireside chat, don't really feel national borders so much, and they see international companies, and they speak in English when they're in 27 different countries. And I think that that we simply have to recognize that there's a benefit not only to industry bringing people in at the university level, but also there's benefit to Denmark from exposing the Danish academic model to an international environment more. And I think it's not that hard to do. Just as an example, just as one example, in the United States, when you graduate from college, you have a undergraduate degree. You don't have a bachelor's per se or a master's per se, you have an undergraduate degree. Now try to fit that into the model. So let's say that there was some brilliant student who your best friend at Princeton called you up and said, I've got this kid who's just brilliant with his undergraduate degree. You say, oh my God, how am I going to get this person into the system to work this way? So all of this stuff has to become easy to become international. And I think that it's not that it's impossible. And you know, someone could call up or write in and say, no, 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 you can do it. You can do it. And it's true, you can, but it's not easy. And so I think that what we have to do is make internationalism at the university level easy, and then it'll happen.
Thank you. And time is flying, and that's what's happened when you're drinking wonderful mind juice. So I'll try to go back to just having a few more questions before we stop. And I would like to ask you, Morten, because 40% of all businesses in Denmark are digitalized at a low degree. And it's also a question from the audience, but how can we increase that number? How can we remove the barriers for going on to this journey?
So I think one thing that we can do as a society is to further enforce the digitization of all interaction with public sector. I mean, we've seen that also here during the COVID crisis. I mean, the fact that all the context that you make to public sector has to be digitized educates the population and provides an infrastructure and makes people simply used to interact digitally. So I think we are pretty advanced in Denmark with that. Further reinforcing that is going to give us an uplift. And then, of course, it's about education. I mean, I once had a dialogue with a professor at the IT University here in Copenhagen. At that point in time, I was working for Maersk, and I was describing how Maersk is embarking upon a digital journey, and that we would like to have a better connect to IT University because we need more talent. And the response was, well, actually, we have an over demand of our candidates, so we don't really need it. And that's a good indicator that we are just not educating young people enough within IT and technology. And then there's a third component, which is that we really need to keep our borders open. I mean, we need to attract international talent to Denmark and don't have all kinds of obstacles to move to Denmark.
Thank you, Morten. And to Jens Jakobsen, who asked the question, we also have a specific solution if you're going to hang on to the end, but more about that. So at the end, very short, because we're running out of time, what will be your one top advice that you'll give to the audience to prepare for the future of skills? And I know you're in a hurry, Charlie, so I'll let you start.
No, I want to go last because I have to think of my answer.
Great. I'll let you, Anna, start then.
So I think it's a matter of having, a critical mass first to begin with. People who can simply develop something. Because the magic happens when you put the great brains together and solve real problems, then you will find a solution to things. And if it's a great solution, then business will follow. But what I would advise to is not to make too many business cases up front, but simply to get started and just get going, solve the problems that are important enough to solve with great brains, and then you will make business on it at a later stage.
Morten.
I would say hire for talent, skills will come.
Great. Anna Sophia.
I would definitely love to see more cross-pollination between the tech industry and other industries. I think a lot of industries have historically recruited for people that were in their industry. And I think we really need to bring people across. You can learn a domain, but I think the tech skills are really broadly applicable.
Charlie, you can't avoid answering anymore. No, are you ready?
I can't. Good. Well, a couple of people took the answer that I was going to give already, which was roughly speaking, hire for talent. But I think that I want to say one more thing, which is please allow people to go beyond. And please allow young people to go beyond and to be dreamers and to say that they would like to study this and this and this at the same time. And don't say to them, that's too much. When you're young, your mind is on fire. And we should tell people when they're young and their minds are on fire, go for it. Dream big.
Dream big. I can't imagine a better note to stop this panel discussion. We have a bit more information, so hang around. But I'll try to consume the key takeaways from the panel today. And I heard invest in developing talent also amongst the colleagues. So it's not only a company mindset or a colleague, a people mindset inside your company. And also this outside in mindset, be obsessed on problems and the customer in the center, make that more important than the KPIs. And as Charlie said here in the end, allow young people to dream big, hire for talent, not for skills, and then avoid business cases, focus on great problems and great talent. Thank you so much for sticking around. Jeg hopper til dansk, mens jeg lige slutter af her. Og jeg har prøvet at få alle de gode spørgsmål med. Jeg er ikke særlig god til multitask, men jeg tror faktisk, vi kom næsten hele vejen rundt. Tak for alle de gode spørgsmål. Og så vil jeg sådan set bare slutte af med at sige, at der kommer jo en ny episode snart. Den kommer på skærmen lige om lidt, så I kan se den. Den hedder nemlig Digital Robusthed, hvor der kommer besøg af David Lloyd fra Alibaba og Ulrik Vestergaard Knudsen, som er vicegeneralsekretær i OECD. Så vær med der, og så hold godt øje med VL's topmøde. Der kommer til at ske spændende ting, og det kommer I til at høre meget mere om. Det kommer til at ske i maj. Så skal jeg lige fortælle om et lille initiativ, som VL og IT-branchen har lavet i fællesskab, nemlig et initiativ, der hedder Bestyrelsesmedlem til Låns. Og det var lidt tilbage til dit gode spørgsmål, Jens Jakobsen. Hvordan overkommer man barriererne med at komme i gang med digitalisering? Og der har vi lavet en løsning netop at stille nogle bestyrelseskompetencer til rådighed, som man kan låne til et møde, som netop har de her digitale kompetencer. Så hvis I sidder derude som virksomhed og ikke rigtig kommet i gang, eller kender nogen, som gerne vil have en dialog med nogen, der har prøvet det her før, så ræk ud til os, så stiller vi et af vores mange dygtige mennesker, der har meldt sig til at være bestyrelsesmedlem til Låns til rådighed. I forpligter ikke til noget. Man kommer ud til et møde, og vi matcher og sørger for, at det problem, I gerne vil have løst, også bliver matchet med den rigtige kompetence, så I får et rigtig godt første møde. Og hvad I så finder ud af bagefter, det er op til jer. Det kan være, at det bliver en blivende bestyrelsespost. Det kan være, at I lige skal bruge lidt tid på at forberede jeres forretning. Det vil vi lade jer om. Men følg godt med i VL's nyhedsbrev, og har I nogen som helst spørgsmål til det her initiativ, så må I endelig række ud til VL eller til IT-branchen og mig. Så vil vi meget gerne svare mere på det. Jeg tror, vi er ved at være ved vejs ende. Tusind tak, fordi I lyttede med, og tusind tak for jeres fantastiske spørgsmål. Og det fysiske skal ikke være en begrænsning. Vi har haft rigtig gode taler på i dag, der har delt ud af deres gode idéer og deres erfaring. Og vi glæder os rigtig meget til at fortsætte den her snak og udvikling fremover. Held og lykke med jeres fremtidige skills.